we're back. Don't call it a comeback, but also don't call it the end, because we're not there yet, but we're lunging for the tape. As far as this MMO Does Halloween series review goes, we are at the final two Halloween movies short of the 2018 remake, which is coming out tomorrow, which might be today when you're listening to this. We don't know, but it's coming out October 18th, the night of technically October 19th. It goes wide and it's officially its national premiere, but these are the last two Halloween episodes. This is Mike, Mike, and Oscar. We are covering Rom Zombie's Halloween and Halloween 2. Did I call him Rom or Rob?
Rom, but
did
that's
say
okay.
Rom, didn't Rom Emanuel. CD Rom Zombie, yeah. I'm Mike One. That's also Mike.
Also Mike here. We have been pumping slow. You know, the arm movement is going slow. The knees are getting
out. Yeah,
Basically, you know, like I said last time, Michael slashed our Achilles. Mm-hmm. Now we got the boot. We're running in the boot.
Right.
The Halloween 2
much
boot.
Like Laurie in this one.
And just barely making it. Just barely. Like, these took the soul out of me, these two movies.
Well, see, that's interesting because
they kick my ass.
You're saying these were harder to get through, or was your soul already sucked out from the resurrection?
I don't know. All I know is that I'm just a hollow shell of a
Halloween
movie watcher.
One might say you're a bloody carcass on the floor of a hospital.
Like, I was going to watch Private Life on Netflix today, and I was like, I can't do it.
I don't deserve happiness.
I watched Halloween 2 last night. It was like, rah!
Yeah. Our
oh my God.
Aggression and anger has definitely been an all-time high. But
BoJack Horseman. That's all I could do.
It's proper. I couldn't even watch pro wrestling, so I don't even know what I watched last night. Just garbage on YouTube. But we're here. We might as well finish the series talking about Rob Zombie.
For 3 hours.
Might as well talk about Rob Zombie's two Halloween remakes. We will start with 2007's Halloween 1. Michael always starts us off with the cast and crew, and that'll be no different this time. Go for it.
Yeah, written and directed by Zombie. One of the hardest rockers of the 90s and 2000s, Zombie was the lead singer of White Zombie.
Who did? What was their song? Their biggest fucking
more
song.
Human
there.
Than
yes,
Humane.
Yes, More Human Than Human, yes. You cosplay on the weekends?
I kind of like
Rob
that song.
Zombie?
It's awesome.
It's a great weightlifting
song. It was a good
song. Yeah.
Yeah. It's good point.
Yeah. It's a great weightlifting song.
Back when we used to lift
weights.
Exactly.
We were in shape.
When that song was popular. That was a great lift.
You said you've never heard his remake of Blitzkrieg Bop, though.
No. I just keep thinking of the KKK took my baby away. You never got there. You never got there. They say, yeah. We're tired after these movies, guys.
It's been a long journey. Long days.
KKK took my baby away.
Thank you for that.
They took it away. Okay. He started out directing short films, Rob Zombie, and music videos for his songs, and then for other bands like Ozzy Osbourne. He directs, after all this, House of a Thousand Corpses.
Which, this has a very House of a Thousand Corpses feel. You could tell they're the same auteur.
I wouldn't go near that video cassette tape, whatever.
VHS.
I wouldn't touch.
Would you touch the DVD?
The DVD
what about the
case.
Betamax? Yeah, no?
I wouldn't even touch the case.
All right.
Devil's Rejects. No way!
I have them up. Devil's Rejects wasn't terrible.
I won't touch it.
I won't even
go near it.
House of a Thousand Corpses was grotesque.
Fake trailer for Tarantino and Rodriguez's Grindhouse double feature called Werewolf Women of the SS, which I did see.
I remember that.
I don't remember if that was funny or not. These two Halloweens, and then, of course, he's done The Lords of Salem and 31. His next film is called Three from Hell.
Sounds very Rob Zombie-esque. Okay, I'll buy it.
So are you a fan of any of these other Rob Zombie films? Like you just said, Devil's Rejects,
tough
maybe?
Tough question. Devil's Rejects was surprisingly decent, at least as far as a horror movie goes. Am I a fan? You got to be in the right headspace, as we find out with these two movies. You know what you're getting into with a Rob Zombie movie. And if you need like that cathartic gore and blood and over-the-top excess of a Red River, sure, yeah, you definitely can find entertainment and enjoyment in it. But if you're just looking for a movie to watch, they could get hard to watch at times. He's a big fan of rape and dismemberment.
I see. And I shall never meet your gaze again. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get this. I don't like torture porn, and I don't get this genre. Like, my biggest complaint with these movies, I love it when he gets stylistic. My biggest complaint is going to be when it's just slow death on film.
It's the biggest downer of this whole thing is that there is a lot of potential in these two. You can see some bright spots, and we're going to get to them all, but there's definitely an abundance of unnecessary gore.
Malcolm McDowell from A Clockwork Orange, Time After Time, and I know him from TV shows Entourage and Mozart in the Jungle. McDowell plays Sam Loomis, Dr. Sam Loomis.
Surprisingly, Donald Pleasance role.
Nobody can do it like Donald.
Of course not.
The voice of Chucky, Wormtongue in The Lord of the Rings, and Oscar nominee from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. That was an unlikely trio of films, correct?
Yeah.
Brad Dourif plays Sheriff Lee Brackett.
I didn't know that, but yeah. Okay.
Troy Maine, who's Sabretooth in X-Men.
Yes, he is.
Ajax and Troy. He is Michael Myers. He is a large human being.
Very.
Scout Taylor Compton is Laurie Strode. She's also been in The Runaways and American Crime.
She plays dipping into senility or diving into senility right. Well. Her anger was a little much sometimes.
I loved her in Halloween 2. Halloween 1, I felt like I just didn't know what they were going for with that character.
See, I think I'm the opposite, but all right. What's
Daeg Feirch.
He was great.
He's got A-E and he's got A-E in his first and last name.
He does. He's a fan of consistency. But man, that little, he plays young Michael Myers in both movies. And that little kid, actually, I don't think he plays it in the second one.
No, it's somebody else in the second one.
Good catch, Mike one. He was great in the first movie playing that dead-eyed, dead-stared. He legitimately scared the hell out of me.
Right.
As he was going into the Michael Myers character.
If he was going to grow up into any other character than Michael Myers, I would have been all in on that. Like if it was just going to turn into a bad guy Rick in some movie.
Right.
No, yeah. I don't know. Because Michael Myers, the kid should be Michael Myers.
We'll talk about the backstory.
Sherry Moon Zombie is Deborah Myers. William Forsythe from every single 80s and 90s action movie, plus Dick Tracy, and of course, like you said, The Devil's Rejects. Mm-hmm. He plays Ronnie White. Clint Howard from every Ron Howard movie, the brother of, is in this. Danny Trejo from Machete and the Expendables movies is in here. Blades, Udo Claire, Lou Temple, Tom Towles, Bill Moseley, Skylar Gazzando, Hannah Hall, Leslie Easterbrook, and a familiar name, Danielle Harris from Halloween's 4 and 5. They all star in Rob Zombie's Halloween. Harris plays Annie Brackett.
Interesting tidbit from the documentaries we tried pointing you to in previous Halloween reviews. Danielle Harris is on the record saying that had they gone through with her coming back to reprise the Jamie Lloyd character in 6 before those negotiations fell apart and she walked away, mm-hmm. she said she probably would not have done the zombie movie, so the only reason she's here is because that did fall through and she felt she owed it to the fans. They would like to see her, so there we are.
I thought she did a nice job.
She's great. She's awesome.
Yeah, you got some specs here, Mike?
Specs directed by Rob Zombie, produced, of course, by Malika Cod, Andy Gold, Rob Zombie.
Son of Mustafa.
Yes, right? He's taken over the helms as he started to in the Halloween 6, The Curse of Michael Myers. He said that's where he really got his feet wet. Screenplay, like Miles and Mike told you, as well, written by Rob Zombie. The production company is attached. Those Weinsteins are listed as the executive producers. So it's Dimension Films, Nightfall Productions, Spectacle Entertainment, and Trankus International, who's been attached to many of these, distributed by MGM and the Weinstein Company as well. This debuted August 31st of 2007. It was a simpler time, 2007, the booming economy. We only had to worry about, like George Bush. Running time was 110 minutes. The critical reception, talk about some numbers. Middling. Metascore 47. IMDb 6.1 out of 10 and 98,000 reviews. That's not terrible, but the Rotten Tomato score isn't great. 25%. Average critical score of 4.1 out of 10 on 28 fresh reviews out of 111. Not great ratio there. The audience did give it a 59%, closer to the 6.1 that IMDb audiences gave it at well, with an average score of 3.3 out of 5 on Rotten Tomato. That comes off of 360,000 votes. The box office, people showed up for it, and that's probably why we get a second one. The budget was listed for $15 million. Domestically, it brought in $58.2 million, 72% of its box office.
We got a new hit franchise,
folks.
Yeah,
those are big numbers. Foreign, it still brought in around $22 million itself. Worldwide gross was $80.2 million. Okay, so we're talking more than 5 times and almost 6 times its production budget? That's definitely a moneymaker for the studios.
I could see how you can cut a great trailer based on the footage on the screen here.
Oh, sure.
In this movie.
Without
question. I don't remember that trailer. I remember being creepy, but
I remember the trailer for 2. I don't really remember the trailer for 1 either. I just remember being very, very excited for it, like I am for this one coming up tomorrow.
So the Weinsteins and Dimension Films wanted Zombie to make this Halloween movie. Remakes were all the fad at that time. John Carpenter requested that Zombie make it his own, and there's a famous interview with Rob Zombie talking about how he called Carpenter, and he had like a 4-word conversation with him. So Carpenter wasn't really willing to collaborate or mentor this process at all. He just kind of wanted to step back and let Zombie do his thing. I don't know if that's because he didn't really respect Rob Zombie's other work, I wonder?
I mean, sure, but we also are on record as before as Carpenter's kind of the, not exactly the most easy guy to get along with, it seems like, and he's very hands-offish with a lot of stuff. He actually had to be persuaded just to be involved with the score of the 2018 remake, so.
Zombie decided to make this a mixture of new material and the reimagined storyline, so part remake, park new stuff.
His fingerprints are all over it.
Add-ons, prequels, remakes, whatever this is. He wanted to make Michael Myers scary again. That was his primary goal.
So let's start him as a kid and feel bad for him and tell him his backstory.
You know, he felt like other slashers had gotten more noteworthy since these Halloween sequels in the past.
He's not wrong. We're fresh off Resurrection, which was a total dud four or five years prior, yeah. So...
I mean, did he see H2O, though? But that's more dramatically satisfying. Michael's not necessarily as scary.
He's also not the overpowering physical force that he would be in this one.
Production began in January 2007, and that's really all I got here, Mike. You got the premise?
Yeah, premise as it reads on IMDb, after being committed for 17 years, Michael Myers, now a grown man and still very dangerous, escapes from the mental institution and immediately returns to Haddonfield to find his baby sister, Laurie. So you'll notice a couple things about that statement. One, it completely disregards the first act of this movie, where we are with child Michael, 10-year-old Michael Myers, as he becomes this psychopathic killer. And two, unlike the original 78 Halloween, Laurie, it's known universally throughout this, not by everyone, but by important characters, that Laurie is in fact the sister of Michael Myers, and that would be the driving force for him to return to Haddonfield and find her.
Yes, sir. So essentially the plot is, I got a very few lines on this, and then we'll kind of go best scene, worst scene, but the plot is young Michael Myers is driven to kill his family because he's bullied by kids at school who he kills first. Kid in Spy Kids.
How is this making him scary? Yeah.
He kills animals on the side, and he's bullied by his stepdad, who's kind of at least...
the most reprehensible character in
the history
movie
of movies.
History, yeah.
So he's awful to everybody, and Michael winds up killing his sister, winds up killing his stepdad, winds up killing the bully all in the same day in reverse order there. And the sister kill was just the... most brutal I've seen in a while. You have this reimagined prequel kind of setup where Michael's at the mental hospital. His mother visits him. He's being treated by Dr. Loomis.
Gets to a point where Michael just shuts down and stops giving Loomis anything. And he's hiding literally, not figuratively, behind all these masks that he's making. And so he goes from this regular, well, quote unquote, regular 10-year-old boy to... turning into this monster that we all know Michael Myers to be.
Yeah, he had no memory of the event at the time, or at least that he was. That's what he was saying.
It's portrayed more as a mental illness than it is a psychopathic, scary movie monster.
They flash forward to basically Michael is a 6'6".
Giant.
Ginormous human
being.
Absolute giant. He cooperates with Danny Trejo, one of his guards, until he doesn't. And all of the guards, Michael basically on the eve of Halloween.
Yes.
He basically kills everybody in the mental hospital.
Escaping from Smith's Grove, kills all the guards, kills Danny Trejo. This is how you know he's a senseless maniac killer, has no regard for human life.
Stops at a service station there, gas station, and he kills everybody there and takes, you know, his suit. He has a mask with him. How does he find it? Oh, he goes home and he gets the mask.
He goes back to his house, and from where, that's where we pick up the homages to the original 78 Carpenter original, because we have our Laurie Strode character dropping off the key at the house for her father, just like, or her stepfather, whatever, as we had in the first one. And Michael Myers is inside the house, but instead of just getting the one shot over his shoulder, he's actually doing stuff in the house. He digs up floorboards, finds his knife, finds his mask.
Yeah, so I'll save the very last scenes for the very end of our kind of beat by beat thing here, but essentially Halloween 1 picks up from there, where we meet Laurie Strode. She's got a lot of the same scenes where Michael starts stalking the girls. It's different because Michael is on a mission to basically see his sister again back at the Myers house.
The biggest difference is, one, the kid stuff. Michael as a child, and we are introduced to there being a baby sister whose life Michael spares the night he kills Judith. So, and that baby sister we are all clued into is going to turn out to be the Scout Taylor Compton character of Laurie Strode. So that's how we turn out. And secondly, there's a big difference that you and I both have a big issue with, if you want to get into it.
Sure.
Just the gore and the obscene violence of this movie.
Just so gross. So what do you want to do first? You want to do worst or best?
I guess since we're here, let's talk about the worst stuff and the biggest problems we had with this, because it's tough to get through. I mean, there is unnecessary rape that fits nowhere in the story. He uses it as a jumping off point. Two guards rape a new inmate in Michael's cell, and that's how they leave the door open for Michael to walk out and escape from Smith's Grove.
Yeah.
But it's so unnecessary.
The breakfast table opening might be the I mean, we have rape and we have slow death in this movie, but the conversation between stepfather abusing the wife.
A problem throughout both movies, and it's a problem throughout a lot of zombie movies. There's no redeeming qualities of any of these characters.
Right,
the only thing on all their minds is sex.
A lot of characters are one-dimensional in a way that's they have no flaws. You won't give a protagonist a flaw.
Right.
You won't give, and in these movies, you won't give them a redeeming quality. It's the opposite. It's
absolutely terrible. They're talking about looking at somebody's titties and slapping their mouth around.
Ugh.
And it's so over. Even the worst of the worst human being cannot talk about that nonstop and be a part of society.
Right.
You do that, you usually end up in an institution because that's a problem.
So why do I want to watch one kid beat another kid with a stick to death? Why is that is that allowed to be put in a movie?
Okay. So
we're watching one 10-year-old kid beat a 12-year-old kid to death.
So here's my take on it. It's more of a devil's advocate stance than it is. I actually had it under a scene I like, and my stance is, and I didn't like it. I agree with you. It's gratuitous, it's unnecessary, but if this is the route you're going to go by showing the backstory of Michael Myers becoming this evil monster, if this is what you're going to do, you have to have something shocking to turn him there, right? Because the audience, especially Zombie said it, he's going to turn Michael into a scary monster again. The audience has to turn against him. And they're not going to turn against, this is the problem with the whole character thing. They're not going to turn against the kid that's being raised in a house with that asshole stepfather who can only talk badly to him and about his stepdaughter and stuff anyway. So they have to do something shocking. I don't like it either, if that's the road you're going to go down.
Have conflicted feelings. Like you could show this kid wince once and show him get hit once, and then that's the end of the scene.
Yeah,
you don't have to make it a 4-minute scene.
Yeah, you're right.
It's just insane.
It is.
Like we don't. It's a snuff film, and this is going to be the problem with
it's
both
a snuff
these
film
movies.
In a lot of areas too, not just that one scene.
Yeah, and it's one slow kill after another. Duct tapes the father to the chair. He's going to kill him with a kitchen knife. All right, gross also. The killing of the sister is brutally suspenseful, but it's just so slow and agonizing. I mean, I guess if that works for some people, I mean, it's very sad, I thought.
And again, it's tied to sex. I mean, she just had sex with her boyfriend, and Michael walked in on it, basically, and kills the boyfriend downstairs first, and then goes up to the room, and we get that weird shot of the sister laying in bed, and we're basically looking up her skirt, her nightgown in bed, and he walks in and starts rubbing her leg, and she thinks it's her boyfriend, and then he kills her. It's just so over-sexualized. It's like, it's almost as if this was done for the purposes of, like, softcore porn at certain
times.
It's
murder porn.
Yeah, it's really disturbing.
I don't like to watch snuff films.
No, I'm with
period.
You there.
So
that's the biggest problem I had.
That's my problem with every scene in the movie, other than some of the dialogue's awful. I mean, the Danny Trejo stuff. I mean, the one scene where he's outnumbered by a bunch of guards and he kills them all fast. That's like one of the best action sequences in the film.
But you can't tell me your whole purpose is to, I want to make Michael scary again, and then you're cutting to like a montage of his great moments as a child before his mother kills himself. We're seeing all him acting like a normal kid, a normal adolescent growing up. And oh boy.
So the mental hospital stuff, it's fine. It's okay. Most of it is not terrible, right? I mean, Loomis is doing his thing. The kid is kind of a mystery. We're kind of intrigued a little bit.
The dialogue Loomis has is so on the note. In a weird way, you become like my best friend.
Yeah, but it's in a weird way, it's like Donald Pleasance, though.
Right.
So, I mean, it's fine.
I guess.
It's all right. It's not terrible. He's not as good of a screenwriter as he... I think he's a better screenwriter on Halloween, too.
Okay.
I thought that dialogue works a little better. But I guess once the Halloween 1 plotline picks up, I kind of like
there's
a lot
more substantiated.
You
there,
got any early worse scenes in that before that picks up, or
it's just more with the characters before, not before that picks up, but more with the character. Every character is so obsessed with sex. We're on record saying Jamie Lee Curtis back in Halloween 78 talked about how the three girls, the Linda, Annie, and Laurie girls, were like the three main types of women that she knew growing up in high school, and how the dialogue was so real. And in this one, they're all talking about sex and getting laid and calling people cunts, and
it's just written by a
it's
guy.
So absurd. Yeah,
it's well, Deborah Hill basically wrote all the dialogue for Laurie and the girls in the first movie, and this is Rob Zombie's picture of teenage girls as a 40-year-old guy or whatever.
Very disturbing.
it really doesn't work. So I don't love the Laurie character, the Laurie Strode character. She kind of just screams and cries. It is a perfectly understandable reaction, let me just say, but she is not the hero. She's just a constantly screaming
victim.
Would
this be better if it wasn't Halloween? If this was just Slasher Movie X? Would this work better?
Probably.
You think so? I'm torn on the subject. I don't know the answer.
Yeah, if we're trying to figure out what the hell drives this villain, then it probably could have worked better. And, you know, you could have changed some things up. But it's just like the one slow kill after another. It's just that I just keep writing the same thing down again and again and again. And it's throughout all these kills, and even the ones where he kills them and in the same way that it's done in Halloween 1. It's just drawn out, slow.
Yeah.
And
deliberate.
I'm going to say Halloween 2 is disgusting, but at least like it is insanely fast. And there's some unforgivable scenes in Halloween 2 coming up. But it's insanely fast. So that's all my worst stuff. Mikey, anything else?
Oh, yeah. There was homages that I do like. We'll talk about them in best scenes. But there's also some, like, this is going to sound so rude, but the steps that Zombie took and made his own seem to be the biggest issues with the movie. Michael isn't stalking these babysitters in this one, or he's not, like, on the outside and has this magical force field where he can't go after them until he starts killing. He's in Annie's house the entire time. Mm-hmm. He's right next to the little girl, Lindsay. He's on top of everyone. The Bob and Linda scene happens in Michael's house. I don't know how we're supposed to feel sympathetic for them.
Yeah, all the metaphors of it are gone. All the chance of it is gone. Like in the first Halloween, before we know he's Laurie's brother, these girls say the wrong thing to him as he's driving around. And this girl happened to drop a key off at the house.
Right.
And he saw her, got a glimpse of her. And then, like, he was basically a predator, an insane wild animal, and this little deer wandered into his line of sight. And that was the kind of character he was. And in the second movie, we know he's a relentless force, and he's more, and the kills are like great white shark attacks.
Right.
They're insane. In this movie, it's just very slow and methodical, which just makes it so much more gross.
So I guess we can go into the best scenes. There are some. I like the homages. I like them when he happens. And Rob Zombie does, you could tell he's a fan of the series. He does take care of certain things. He makes a big deal about Michael finding the mask. He makes a big deal about that mask in general and how what it means to Michael. He makes a big deal about Michael and masks. We actually get a connection and a reason for why he's so attached to the mask that's not in the first one at all. I appreciated that.
Now, I kind of like that Dr. Loomis is like a sellout in these movies. I think there was
He is in the second one. This one, I don't think he's.
But he's like, Ed and Lorraine Warren, maybe before they went big time. He's not a guy that's well respected. He does like schlock books, and he wrote a book about Michael, and I kind of like that. Again, I love the escape from the guards at the mental hospital. I think the fight with Joe Grizzly to steal a suit at the car garage.
You like that?
It was all right. And then, you know, once they kind of rebooted the Halloween 1 timeline,
stuff.
Using Mr. Sandfield as a reintroduction for Haddonfield was cool. Like, I like some of that. The Laurie's pervy with everything she says. Like, that was
different. It's not Laurie Strode.
Right.
Why is she the final girl?
Talking to her parents.
Why is she the final girl if she's just, if not more, as sexually motivated as all the other characters?
Well, I mean, I guess what Zombie is saying there in a weird way is that all girls are sexualized. They can be. They should be. It's fine. So why? And I'm just saying that all girls can have can speak that way.
Right. They all have libidos.
You know, they all have libidos too. I mean it in that way.
It's just gross.
Yeah, it just doesn't work. It doesn't work. I like the kid who plays Tommy, little Tommy Doyle.
Being all the know-it-all and informational?
He
I didn't mind that.
He was just in this movie Class Rank, where he's awful, by the way. I don't like the character in this new movie. It's on Netflix now. But
okay.
he is very good as
a child. Your career is terrible, but you did well here, kid.
He did well here. And Dr. Loomis had a great line too.
Okay.
Like, there's a terrific line in this movie. The grave keeper is talking to Dr. Loomis about Ruth's grave or Deborah's grave, mm-hmm. or whoever it was. The guy's like, yeah, I read that somewhere. And Loomis is like, yeah, I read the fucking book. It was a masterpiece. Without any humor whatsoever. I enjoyed that. Tommy's Halloween costume was great. I mean, visually, this movie really works.
The editing is good. Like, the score works too at certain times. It's very dramatic. Especially at the end, I don't mean to jump around on you, but at the end during the cat and mouse hunt, where Lori's climbing through the ceiling and Michael's sticking the 2x4 up intermittently, it's a great job there.
Look,
by Rob.
Michael Myers should be working in flipping houses and, you know, for real estate agents. And he, in terms of him renovating,
sure,
he would. There's
Move
nobody better.
That boss. There's it's just no, Michael destroying everything.
There's nobody better.
You're
at
right.
tearing something down so you can build it back up. And the property destruction in this movie is pretty darn
destructive.
It's impactful on you as a viewer. It's pretty darn impactful.
It serves a purpose, absolutely. And it plays right into the cat and mouse game that is so essential to any Halloween movie between Laurie and Michael.
So, Mike, do you want to talk about that extra ending yet?
Yeah, let's get into it.
All right, so Laurie is in the car with Loomis, right?
Right, and Loomis had fire. This takes place in an in-ground pool. Mm-hmm. Loomis comes on the scene just at the last second. Laurie is getting stalked still. He puts 3 bullets into Michael.
I'm kind of fine with all that, the way that
Michael
played out. Yeah.
They go into a cop car. Laurie drops line, was that the boogeyman? Indeed, I think it was.
Without ended Halloween 1.
Right.
That line.
And doesn't happen this time. Michael right then crashes through the window, drags out Laurie, drags out Loomis. There's a big kerfuffle happens.
Mm-hmm.
And we end up essentially, the movie ends with Michael charging at Laurie on the second floor, crashing through the balcony of the second floor and landing on the ground below. Laurie, bloody, battered, and bruised, is able to have Loomis's gun near her at that time, as she had throughout the struggle, and eventually puts one in Michael's head while screaming to the sky. That's how we end, and it just goes to credits with her yelling.
Right. And it's pretty cool. Like,
I didn't mind it. I really didn't mind it.
I didn't mind that extra ending at all. I thought that worked. I thought the whole Michael chasing her through the ceiling, like you said, really worked.
I love that part. Yeah. I thought it was such a cool cat and mouse moment. And that's the essence of what Halloween is. And so I was okay with it.
You know, remaking this movie, we don't know there's going to be a sequel. So we're like, all right, did they just kill Michael? Is this a one-off?
Yeah, is it a one-off? It was just an homage. And
it's
kind of
cool.
I remember seeing it in theaters and having a very similar thought and being like, well, if this is all they're going to do, I guess it works. And they actually, at that point, I thought they had killed Loomis as well.
Yep.
Turns out he comes back, obviously. But I was okay with all of it. I was disappointed because I wanted it to be the kickoff to a whole new franchise. But
in a weird way, you forget how bad it was in the first half of the movie at some point with the new stuff.
But that probably means something too, doesn't it? That those characters are so reprehensible, but also so forgettable. They serve no purpose. They don't need to be written that way.
Still, I like a couple of the characters, like Brad Dourif. I mean, he's a good actor, and he's dealing with crap dialogue. He'll have better lines in the next movie. And then, both brackets, I thought Daniel Harris does a nice job.
Daniel Harris is great. Yeah. I want to see her in more stuff. But yeah, I agree. Sheriff Brackett as well. He's an old veteran of the game, which mm-hmm. was news to me, but he was awesome as well.
You know, all those unlikable bit characters, they do okay for the most part.
Sure.
And it really, Haddonfield was not terrible.
No,
like, if that was the movie, if the movie was Halloween 1 and they didn't remake and retcon or whatever they did with all the rest of the stuff, it's a better movie, isn't it?
I liked it when I first saw it back in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
I'd watched it, I think, maybe twice since then. I saw why people seemed to be so vehemently against it. I understood it. Now, viewing it as a full-grown adult, quote-unquote, the grossness really sticks with me.
Yeah.
The obscene dialogue and violence. It's Eli Rothian in a way. It reminds me of Hostel.
I don't see any of his movies.
I can't.
Yeah.
There you go.
So that is where we're at with Halloween 1. You ready to dive into 2 here, Mike?
Oh, boy. Twice as nice. Halloween 2. Rob Zombie's back at the helm 2 years later. We're in 2009. Go ahead.
Yeah, Scout Taylor Compton returns as Laurie Strode. Malcolm McDowell as Sam Loomis. Sherry Moon Zombie somehow returns as Deborah Myers.
I mean, somehow. You know who the director is?
Brad Dourif as Sheriff Brackett. Tyler Mane as Michael Myers. And Danielle Harris as Jamie No... Annie Brackett. New additions to the cast include future Oscar nominee Octavia Spencer.
Maybe the most out of left field surprise casting that we've had in a while.
Creepy dude extraordinaire. We just seen him in Mandy, Richard Brake. Yeah. And Lois Lane herself, Margot Kidder.
Another one. Like, what are you doing here?
Chase Wright, Vanek, Carolyn Williams, Dayton Callie, Richard Reel, Mary Birdsong, and Brea Grant also star. Mike, some specs.
Mary Birdsong has to be a fake name, by the way. Gotta get that off my chest. Yeah. Directed by Rob Zombie as well. Produced once again, Malika Cod, Andy Gould, and Rob Zombie. Once again, the Weinsteins have their hands on this. Written by Rob Zombie. Also, Mike told you all that. Distributed by Dimension Films, the Weinstein Company. And released once again, almost 2 years to the date later, on August 28th, 2009. The runtime is 105 minutes. Scores are down, even from the disappointing critical reception that the first movie had. The Metascore is a 35, way down. IMDb was saved on the first one, but this one, it's almost unwatchable. 4.9 out of 10, 42,000 votes, and Rotten Tomatoes doesn't do it any favors either. A 19% critic score, average critic score of 3.7 out of 10, 45% audience score, average audience score 3.1 out of 5 on 385,000 votes. It once again was given a $15 million production budget.
Only 39.
Yeah, only 39 million worldwide, 33 million domestic, 6 million.
Last one was 80.
Foreign. We're down more than half of the total take from the first one.
Now,
so,
is that the fault of the first movie, or is that the fault of these reviews, or basically when the reviews came out, it confirmed what everybody was fearing, that it would be like the first one?
This one was a lot of improvements at the time.
Yeah.
I remember the buzz around the Halloween franchise at first was that Rob Zombie was done with it.
Right.
And they wanted to go in a different direction. But then when this one was announced, there were plans for a third. I don't think anyone really expected Rob Zombie to get another bite at the apple. So I don't know if it was people were offended by the first one, or people were just jaded by the critical scores, or word of mouth spread and it was negative. Could be some combination of the three, likely is. But again, losing half of the box office take is going to hurt any film.
And they got a big tax break in making this movie. They filmed it in Georgia with huge tax incentives. The director wanted it done there so he can kind of increase his budget a little bit. Zombie had earned the trust of Malika Cod.
Which is crazy to me, because Malika Cod is the reason the producer's cut on Halloween 6 doesn't have any blood. And then Zombie goes above and beyond. The Weinsteins wanted all the blood in the theatrical cut of 6. Zombie has infinitely more blood in Halloween 1. And Malika Cod's cool with it.
One of the more bloodier movies I've seen ever. And I watched this one on Showtime. I watched the last one on AMC. I didn't even see the rape scene because I didn't watch it.
Oh, you
DVD.
Didn't see it? Well, no, consider yourself lucky.
Yeah. So this movie, I watched the true cut of it, though. But Cod said he wanted Zombie to move the franchise away from some of the more established rules. That couldn't have hit you well there, Michael. Here's a quote from Zombie. As Laurie is Michael's sister, I'm playing it like he's clearly insane and so is she.
But
her insanity doesn't manifest itself in the same way.
I like that.
She's slipping into insanity throughout the movie.
I think that Scout Taylor Compton's strength was what she showed in slipping into insanity.
Liked her performance a lot in this.
I misspoke before. I did like her performance more in this one.
Oh, did you? So they mesh together because we watched these in a day. I wanted to cry at the end of last night. Like I said,
both wearing tattered clothing,
I was
going to
watch a dramedy with Catherine Hahn and Paul Giamatti. He's like, I'll never laugh again. I'll never dance again.
Humanity is fleeting.
Zombie characterized.
The cosmic ballet goes on.
What are we going to do? Losing my mind. Yeah. Zombie characterized Loomis in the sequel as more of a sellout.
Love that. And that's what you hit on in the first one. It happens to the nth degree in this one. Dr. Loomis becomes an asshole.
Now, his arc is kind of ham-handed. They kind of rush it a little bit, I would say, even though there's three major scenes that they kind of tackle too much. Like, I think it's too much of a Well, it's too much of a meta conversation about all of the news. Like, they could have focused it a little better.
Okay.
I'm fine with that. The exploitative journalistic world, and right. You know, they think they're all highbrow, but they're really
I wonder how much of an inspiration this served for what we got in Scream 4, because the similarities between the book signing that Loomis does in this one and what Scream 4 starts off with Sidney Prescott having an event,
it's preposterous that he would have a book signing in Haddonfield.
Absurd, but just as preposterous
without security
that Sidney Prescott would have one in Woodsboro. Scream, you know?
Completely and utterly ridiculous. And that they would have all this coverage from there. It just makes no sense.
It does.
That they would do it with such fanfare, it makes no sense. They would be totally respectful of the people there, I would think.
But that being the case, and I don't know if we're going to touch on it, so I'll bring it up now. The father of the slain Linda from the first movie.
Of course.
Coming up and pulling a gun. Yeah, that's a nice touch, because if that were to happen in this ridiculous world, you would think there'd be some kind of comeuppance for Loomis to spreading his wings and stroking his own ego like that.
It is grounded in some truth in the sense that...
sense of reality.
Yeah, I mean, Charles Manson was prosecuted by Vincent Bugliosi, who then wrote a book about it, and this was kind of the basis for Loomis and Michael. Different relationship between, not his client, the other client. Anyway, he wanted Loomis to seem more ridiculous this time, and I kind of like that.
Yeah, I didn't mind it. I didn't mind that touch. Certainly a deviation from anything we got from any of Donald Pleasence's portrayals, so make it your own. If you're going to make it your own, make it your own. I'm okay with that.
Mike, you got the premise?
Unless making it your own means I have to watch rape and forced executions and dismemberment over a period.
True that.
IMDb premise, Laurie Strode struggles to come to terms. Even then, wait a minute, even if you do that, I don't mean to stop myself, but there's a way in which you could do it and have it fit the narration. If you do it just for gratuity's sake, that's where my issue is.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I wanted to put that asterisk in there. Laurie Strode struggles to come to terms with her brother Michael's deadly return to Haddonfield, Illinois. Meanwhile, Michael prepares for another reunion with his sister.
So I just want to say right off the bat, I feel like if you cut 10 minutes from this movie, most of it bloody, gory death, this could be a very strong film, even though we'd have major problems with the storytelling, but it would have been a satisfying kind of thriller slasher movie.
So I'll agree with that. Along those lines, prior to talking about this in the pre-production meeting, before we hit record, my take was, if this is just the 15 minutes, again, if this is a short film of Michael going through the hospital to find his sister, it would be great. And I would actually prefer it over what we got for Halloween 2 in 1981.
Yes. Halloween 2 in 15 minutes by Rob Zombie was effing awesome.
It was insane.
It was so gross. Good. It is gross, but it's pushing the limit of it. Like, you're sad.
It makes narrative sense. He's pissed off and a psycho killer at this point because he just got bulleted up and he's lost his sister, who stabbed her, by the way.
And even leading up to that with the car and the cow and the ambulance and the cow, that was terrifying. And you kind of get the cosmic justice thing where the guys are talking about necrophilia in the
ambulance. Again, the most reprehensible people on earth are EMTs.
Michael Myers kills the worst people in the world in these slasher movies. So again, we are expecting that. To me, the opening image of Laurie walking down the street, that was terrifying.
Awesome.
And terrifying.
Don't Breathe, which was a horror movie, came out in 2016, I want to say, did a similar take, which was very reminiscent of this.
Loved it.
Loved the visual. I'm with you.
And her just, going so slow. And then it is jarring watching the EMTs and the doctors clean her up and all those real life wounds. Like, I am freaking out.
You can get grotesque,
but that's
okay. It fits the narration.
Yes.
Yeah, you can. She just went through a life or death battle with a psychotic giant. She's allowed to have gross wounds.
It makes total sense, and it just grounds us in the fact that, oh, shit, we are in for it with this movie. Yeah. But also, just the realism of it all. I mean, this is going to get nitty-gritty. I just wish they didn't dwell on the actual death. But
so this is the first 15. We come in. Michael's hot on the trails of Lori. Lori's being admitted to the hospital. She's still stumbling around. Michael finds her and just makes a bloodbath of everyone, working his way to Lori. brutally kills Octavia Spencer, mm-hmm. stabs her multiple times. Where
terrifying.
For all of it, yeah. That's grotesque.
That's as horrifying as it gets because she's crawling and screaming, and it almost gets too much.
It does, yeah.
But then she's still fighting for life. Like, that's where that's the end of my nerves right there.
I'm with you.
Right?
With you.
And then they even go above and beyond that with the jump to conclusions, Matt, guy from Office Space, dying as a guard.
The grandfather from Grounded for Life. I don't know why I watched that TV show, but... So Lori makes her way in the pouring rain, of course, out to this guard shack, this guard
and they
hut.
Do the same thing where they go through the tool shed of the hospital, all those hallways,
yeah.
right?
And deep, dark hallways,
and
yeah.
she's bent down the stairs and up the stairs.
It's a whole Lori's getaway. It's
barely
great.
Getting out. It's awesome.
So Michael
super
eventually does kill. We get a fake scare, first of all, with the security guard locking Lori into the hut, leaving and then coming back. We're expecting it to be Michael, but it's not. He comes back. He unlocks the door. Michael pops up, kills him, gets his way to Lori, gets an axe, starts destroying the place, finally has an axe over his head, is going to chop Lori in the head. The axe comes down. She wakes up. It was all a dream. Used to read Word Up magazine.
It's the worst thing about this movie, unless it would have had the biggest payoff at the end. That's what I was thinking.
That it's
going
to lead. Well, I knew
at
it
least,
didn't, but yeah, that would have been nice.
At
You're
least
right.
going into the scene for the first time.
Yeah.
I wanted Michael to be a dream this whole movie, honestly.
Oh, that would have been... I didn't even know you were going there. That would have been awesome.
If you wrote it that way and Michael was a dream and this was her descent into madness primarily, because...
Sign me up, Mike. I'm for that.
That mama with the white horse,
yep.
that was in her head,
yes.
thinking of Michael.
Yes.
So we get, clearly it's her POV, even though Michael comes to life... And be, like, I just wanted her
like
to be
that.
The killer
really
at
like
the
that.
Very, very end. And that would have been the craziest thing ever.
So, can you write that?
And she killed her friend at the end. There really wouldn't have been more to it than
I'm
that.
I'm all for that.
Because here's another thing. At the Halloween party, the same actor who's like the number two at the strip club,
mm-hmm.
he plays a guy in full makeup and costume at
him?
The Halloween party.
Okay.
100%.
Sure.
I recognize faces. I have
I'm
a good
terrible
eye for
faces.
So it's 100% the same guy. So I was like, oh my God, I see it. He just got killed.
Oh,
so I figured she
I
dreamt.
See.
I thought she dreamt that about Michael killing him and none of those deaths really happened.
Well, it would make sense too, because why is Michael taking so goddamn long to come back to Haddonfield in this one?
Right.
He got shot in Haddonfield. He was transported away from Haddonfield.
I wonder if Zombie wrote it this way and he wrote that twist at the end where Lori
and
killing Annie
that
and basically
really
her
smart.
Other friend, that was the end of the film and yeah. Michael was only a figment of her imagination the entire movie.
God, you gotta write that script, man. That's genius. I
that
never thought of that.
That
would have been beautiful.
That would have fixed the
yeah,
script.
That would have been
I mean,
beautiful.
It would have been really weird, but at least it was all a dream sequence would have made sense.
Right, sure.
At the end, and it would have lived up to another crazy ending. I don't know, but it would have been ambitious.
So that's the basically plot of this. Michael's working his way back to Haddonfield. It's basically, I kept thinking about the hero's journey, because it's literally every shot of Michael up until Act 3 is him just journeying his way back to Lori.
So I got a lot of bests here, Michael.
Yeah,
what do you want to
take? Yeah,
you're
a big fan of this. So let's start negative. Let's get that out of the way, and then we'll gush about it, because I'm positive on this, not as much as you, but there are some negatives I want to work my way through. Again, the EMTs right off the start. Terrible people, the worst people.
Yeah, made. Gross. I didn't love the White Horse Dream at first. Then it kind of grows on me.
So the White Horse Dream, just for explanation purposes, Michael and Lori, it turns out, are having these visions of Deborah Myers, who's, again, Sherry Moon Zombie's character, Michael's mother from the first one, and also Lori's mother in this one. It's the white horse in a dream is supposed to be your expression for something, a great emotional expression.
So essentially...
So they keep visualizing her.
This young Michael Myers doesn't have the dead eyes that the last kid had. And I didn't like that. They showed like a flash of a scene. And this kid's just like a normal kid.
Yeah.
And that didn't work for me. Like, again, it's a movie. I know in real life, who knows what the kids are able... I know serial killers are able to convince people there are many different things. They convince people
chameleon.
That they are empathetic. But I didn't like that opening scene. Obviously, it was all a dream.
That sucks.
That
it does, because that 15 minutes, that first 15, 20 minutes would have been beautiful.
I mean,
sequel.
I just have no in my notes. Don't tell me that was a dream. That was so excellent. Real suspense.
Did you just put on B.I.G. afterwards and just sit back and nod?
I was so happy with that sequence in the sense that it was the best zombie Halloween stuff in the two movies
far,
up till then.
By
a lot.
That the two best parts, I think, are that and the way that Annie's death is handled at the end here. That was the most impressed I was with Rob Zombie through both
movies. Every death was like a great white shark attack. It was just so fast and brutal and violent. And that's, we can handle that. We don't like the slow trudging stab.
The torture porn.
The Joker says, save every nuance of the knife. Yeah, come on.
I can't express enough, though, how much I despise the way Rob Zombie writes teenage girls. Lori's working at this bookstore, this record store owned by this hippie, and her new friends are trying to convince her to wear a made Halloween costume, and she doesn't want to. So their response is, you need me to flash the owner again? What?
Yeah.
How are we supposed to? What? How's that supposed to work?
Yeah, Rob Zombie doesn't remember teenage girls.
But the guy's married. He has children, I'm pretty sure. Like, he knows he's interacted with women, yes?
Well, I guess... I guess if he's married and has teenage girls as children.
I don't know if he has teenage girls. I don't know.
I'm being Dr. Loomis here for a minute.
Okay.
He doesn't want to write the girls that are going to get massacred by Michael Myers like
to be redeemable.
Like his children.
Okay.
Anyway, he wants no parallel between his kids and these kids.
My daughters because would these survive kids, because they're good girls.
Right? I'm just saying.
Sure,
amateur psychologist here. probably overstepped my boundaries as a film critic today.
I'm looking at my all my worst scenes, and a lot of them have to do with that lead singer of the band on stage during the big party. Just immediately, he starts making sexual jokes, okay? Everybody starts booing him.
Right.
Everybody in this universe is like the lowest form, the lowest hanging fruit, just driven and obsessed with sex. If he actually made those jokes to the people that were alive and shown to us in this movie, that guy would be like the president. He'd be cheered off the stage. He'd be like, yeah, you're saying everything we think. Mm. He wouldn't be booed. That offended me.
Yeah, I didn't pay attention enough. Visually, I liked that whole sequence. I mean, the Halloween party, but I still can't get past. Like, to me, the grossest sequence in both movies where I'm just like, ugh, I want to shut it off. If I was in the movie theater, this would be the scene where I might just walk out just furious because it's a snuff film. In that strip club. Everything in that strip club is the grossest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. I'm with you.
That girl running away naked, and he's just going to slowly bash her into the mirror.
Breaking the owner's arm and letting him escape and chasing him down.
Just the grossest thing I've ever seen. The most disturbing in any of the Halloween films. And I just so... Ugh.
And the very end, I had an issue with, too, as the cops just, like, a hail of gunfire to take this guy out, knowing that Lori is on the property somewhere. Right. They're just firing at all angles on him.
Lori does one thing I really didn't like in this movie, Michael. Mm-hmm. She says she's got to get out of town, which is the best impulse I've ever seen, especially
after
on Halloween night.
Let's
get out of Haddonfield on Halloween night. Let's be in Prague. Let's be in freaking Prague, Mississippi. Don't be in Haddonfield on Halloween night, Lori.
Fair criticism.
Don't go to Des Moines.
I'm going to Des Moines.
She goes to her coffee house co-workers. Instead, after she declares she's going to leave town
for good. After like a half hour of introspection, is like, you know what? Let's fucking party.
Yeah. What?
Let's not.
She has a couple of beers.
Let's not psychoanalyze the fact that I just discovered I'm this mass psychopath sister, because that's what spurs this, her running away. I'm Angel Myers, as she's titled in this movie.
Right.
Let's just fucking put on slutty Halloween costumes and go to a party. Because and why do horror movies always have the best parties? Did you ever go to a party like this when you were growing up?
Never, not even close. Like,
all these decorations and the theme and the outfits.
The best Halloween party was probably your guys' house at the Yukon there.
Which was a mess. An absolute mess. We had a fog machine and that was it.
Yeah. So Loomis at the very end, so to skip ahead to my more worse, but I don't have that many, honestly.
I'm pretty much tapped out. I big problem with a lot of the characters, but other than that.
Right, Loomis goes in to save Lori, and I like that.
That too.
I like that.
He takes it upon himself. Sheriff, I owe you this much.
But then once he gets in there, Michael's sitting there with a huge knife.
Yeah.
And all he can do is scream at Lori, who's obviously just having a nervous breakdown.
Total breakdown.
Just shaking.
She thinks she's being held back by young Michael, who she has seen throughout this movie. But the reality is nobody is there. It's her own mind. It's a prison of her own mind.
Right. And, of course, Michael kills him horrifically.
Yes.
But, all right, it makes sense. And I like that that kind of sacrifice from him gets them a clean shot at Michael.
Thousand shots.
Yeah. The shot or two. The sheriff does it. I like that.
Yeah, I'm
sheriff
okay
Brackett,
with that.
You know, after his daughter died, I don't think he would have been stone cold, you know, marksman there, but that's fine.
Probably not.
I'm okay with
it. Again, there was this hail of gunfire to back him up.
Why does Lori say she loves him in this sequence? That's like the worst thing of the movie. Like, we've just seen actual murder on screen. Rob Zombie just hired some plebeians and killed them.
I don't know if the version I watched had that. When did she say she loves him?
She's like, love you, brother. Yeah, I just watched it. I watched it last night. I wrote it down. Why did she say she loves him?
I watched the unrated director's cut from the box set, so I didn't have that scene.
And Michael gives her the knife. Fine. All right, serial killers like to stop. They try. Once they know they're like he's impaled on everything, he's like, all right, kill me. I get it. I get that. But I don't know why she says she loves him. I mean, the last movie, she got captured by him and she stabs
him.
Yeah,
I didn't have these. I didn't have this. I had her. My ending was Michael gets the hail of gunfire.
This is on Showtime last night.
Yeah. Right? So Michael gets the hail of gunfire, drops. Mm-hmm. Lori stumbles out of the shack herself, picks up the knife on her own, stands over Loomis's deceased corpse, and then gets shot 3 times by cops.
Lori gets shot?
Yeah. Which makes no sense, but that's the ending I had.
That's not what I had.
That's
at
interesting.
All.
Okay.
Lori came out with the mask on in the theatrical cut.
Oh, no shit. I've never seen this.
So
okay.
Lori's out with the mask on, or I don't know if it's theatrical cut. Maybe it's whatever. It's a Showtime
it's
cut
Showtime,
last
yeah.
night. And she just drops the mask, and then the end of the movie, she's in a mental hospital.
I had that as well.
Which I thought was pretty good.
I did like that. Down the long white hallway.
Yes.
Yeah, where she has this smirk on her face after seeing, again, the White Horse and Deborah Myers. I like that as well. But again, you pitching your version of this movie makes that scene infinitely better.
Right?
Yeah, without question.
All right, so we want to get into
let's gush a little.
The first 15 minutes are awesome, like
best,
we said.
The best!
Gross.
Yes.
I'm barely able. I'm just like, ugh.
Octavia Spencer was taking all each of those blows. Like, I'm going to win an Oscar. I better fucking get gold after this.
Yeah. And if I had eaten something previously to those first 15 minutes, I might have just vomited.
I had peanut
everywhere.
Butter and I had to stop.
I really didn't. I didn't eat much last night. I eat 17 meals a day, but that was a day where
I
didn't.
Cut yourself back to 16.
I knew I was going to watch a gross movie.
Yeah.
I just couldn't
it. You weren't disappointed in that.
I'm like Mustafa Akkad. I can't handle it usually, but this was just like from the jump.
Yeah.
Just like, ugh.
Yep.
I'm glad. Anyway, Lori running from Michael at the hospital. That whole sequence is great, like we said.
Love it. Love it. Absolutely love it.
I liked the dialogue between the Brackets and Lori at the house. Because it's all about pizza and breakfast and food. And if there was dialogue about a sandwich, I would have been like,
simpleton.
Best original screenplay.
I
liked
known.
It. It was all like metaphors for their dysfunctional relationship, talking about the pizza and her wanting, you know, regular and her whole wheat
wanting
and him
wheat
wanting
crust versus
yeah.
Yeah. All right,
the
sure.
Zombie has a little subtext. I like that.
All right, I'm good with that. That's that's fine.
Doctor says they never found his body at the therapy session.
Yes.
This is awesomely bad because Margot Kidder, right? That was Margot Kidder.
Yes, it was.
Margot Kidder should not be reminding.
No.
This delusional girl has nightmares every single night.
Night terrors, screaming.
As vivid
yeah.
as the first 15, as Halloween 2, the entire film, condensed into 15 minutes of pure mayhem. She should not be reminding this girl, well, they never
you
find their
closure.
Body. You need closure. Of course you need closure. They never found his body. He could be anywhere. It could be behind the couch right now where you're laying down.
That'll be $40.
So that's the scariest therapy session I've ever even witnessed.
It's a bit unprofessional, yes.
But I'm laughing throughout, and I think it's pretty crazy and fun. For my enjoyment.
You're getting darker on me. I like it.
I enjoy that. Right. I enjoy her being freaked out. So she's peaked freak out while
Michael. You literally made me pause there for a second, which is just a total reversal of fortune from how these usually go. But all right.
I'm an evil man.
Yeah,
heart,
I guess so. I don't mind it.
It was going to come out at some point in this pod. So God, I love that Loomis gets out of a limo. He's driving around in a limo.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's totally sold out.
So over the top. And again, I like over the topness in these kind of movies. I do.
I don't mind honestly. It. I really don't. I really like a lot of decisions made with Loomis's character. And I like how he's pretty much just this douchebag that doesn't really care about people.
So what do you think of Mountain Man Michael roaming around? I kind of like it,
The scenery is gorgeous. It really is. Like, these are like Lord of the Rings shots.
I can't lie.
I don't understand it. I don't understand why it's taking him so goddamn long to get to a town he was just shot in and taken away from for 10 minutes, but whatever.
He just went off in the woods. He's got to wait a year. He's got to wait a year for Halloween.
Why?
I don't know.
There's no explanation.
But apparently he's come into contact with these rednecks before, these rough and tumble guys.
Yeah, they see him as a vagrant. Again, the worst people in the world.
So he was trespassing on their land. He'd done it before, like I said. And that's a gross and terrifying interaction between these guys.
He kills them brutally. And then the one person that has redeemable qualities is the girl that's with them, who's trying to make sure he's okay after getting his ass beat. I mean, that beat up scene is ridiculous too. The rednecks are like, don't come around here. Hey, why are you still standing there? Baseball bat to the face.
So here's something interesting, Michael. Michael eats this dog, right? The dog's in the cage. Yeah. All he does is kind of put his...
Drag the knife or whatever he had over
the grate. We don't watch Michael just completely carve up this dog step by step over a 30-second edit.
Yeah, that's where he found the line, I guess. That's where Rob Zombie drew the line.
And yet, we'll watch him carve up people, Rob Zombie.
Yeah.
With these scenes. That's why I don't understand it. Like, he understands... Like, Rob Zombie knows that if he kills a dog slow in a movie,
he'll get backlash for it.
And yet, like, a naked stripper running away, totally crying and helpless, or a teenage girl, they need to die and we need to see every second of it.
Didn't you also find it interesting, that scene where he's eating the dog? It's juxtaposed against...
with the pizza.
The pizza and the meat and how we're all carnivores and we need to get off animal
products. I like that in a very sick way.
Yeah, there's so much subtext right there in the fucking dog eating scene.
Then I was hungry, Mike. Then I was hungry. No, I liked it.
Yeah, I didn't mind it. I hate seeing animal cruelty of any kind, but you're right. We didn't see the dog get killed. We just saw it was juxtaposed. How is it different than
eating pepperoni? Why couldn't they do that with all the human deaths?
There's differences, but yeah. No, you're right. So you're right in the sense also that just shows he's capable of showing subtext and technique with the kills. So why do it in such a grotesque manner? Yeah.
So again, these dreams grow on me. They're on the nose in a way, but I like the one that got really batty, the pumpkin head feast, like all the royalty pumpkin heads feasting on stuff. And that was I don't know if you saw this in your cut.
I don't know if I had it, but go ahead.
But there's all these people with pumpkins for heads and Michael's little, mother's realm.
Okay.
And they're all eating weird things, and it's a Lori dream of Michael, I guess. They're connected telepathically like they were in those older sequels. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you didn't see that. Wow, in your cut?
No, I don't. I
see a weird cut?
I had some scene where I missed the pumpkin heads, but it was like Lori was laid out on a table, and they were eating around her. So I had that scene, and she gets grabbed by hands.
Right. So I think that's it. They had pumpkins.
I missed
which is the cool. It was the coolest part.
That's on me.
I think Lori's dreams are really scary, and they're getting scarier and scarier. They're tipping you off to the plot in a way, but I just wish they had that in reversal. Like, all that stuff could have set up a reversal of her being the killer at the end.
You're right, you're totally
so
right.
Well! Yeah. Oh, so mad at that didn't play out, and even though I guessed it.
I also like the tact, Annie's death. Lori comes home from the party. She finds Annie all brutally slain and cut up, and she's not totally dead yet. And we cut the audio of Annie's death, and all we are shown are the flashbacks. So we don't even get the brutality of the murder. We just get snippets of Michael chasing her and the music playing when Sheriff Brackett arrives at the house. There was like an actual humanity to that.
True.
I like that.
True, because we built up that character a little more throughout this movie for once. And yeah, I agree. I like that. He could have tastefully murdered all these kids.
Right.
Darn it. I would have went in for the tasteful version. But yeah, I mean, that was and you don't have to show her naked lying on the ground. Right. There was no nudity in those scenes that I saw.
No, if there was, it was a flash.
Right. Yeah. So that again, you do it tastefully. You get, God damn it, zombie. You could have really made this awesome. And here... what I don't like about that whole sequence, and this is a nitpick, but based on this kind of a movie, why doesn't anybody smell him? He's got to smell like the most rotten garbage in the world. All it would take
it
is poor Annie.
The smell of the pizza.
All Annie would just got to do is just go, and I am satisfied.
Is there a murderous giant in this house?
Smells like Bigfoot's dick. I mean, come on, that was in the bathroom with you a few feet away. Like, Michael should smell like garbage.
Garrett gets it. He spent the entire movie walking through
like Bigfoot. He should smell like Bigfoot.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Oh, my God. So, finding Annie just ripped my heart out. I was really, really upset for that. And then Laurie's upset. And I've gotten to know Laurie in this movie.
Yeah, the score played with you, too. That was, like, a beautiful use of the score.
I was, this
movie. Like an angelic hymn.
Actually has some drama to it. Whereas the last one, I'm not that invested with Laurie because they don't show her until the middle of the movie.
To steal a line from you, the highs of this movie are higher than the highs in one.
Right.
I think one might be a more consistent movie, even though they're both pretty gross.
Now, I love the fact that Laurie finally finds someone to help her, like a good Samaritan in the car on her way out of there.
Another false ending, yeah.
That's terrific. I like that she just runs.
Mm-hmm. Get the hell out of there.
Just get away. It's awesome. Michael flips the car. Are you kidding me? That was crazy.
Awesome.
That was awesome. It was great. I'm glad the cops also figured it out.
I am too. I really like that. And I like that the cops... I didn't mention this in Halloween 1, but I like that the cops are capable. They actually made it to Laurie's house in Halloween 1. It's just that Michael had the jump on them and killed them. The cops respond here. They get to Laurie in the shack
they have
at
intel.
The end of Halloween 2.
They have a perimeter. Yeah. They have all this stuff
which is
that
important,
makes
too, because we've been shown Sheriff Brackett throughout the majority of this movie, and we think of him as a capable protagonist, or at least one of. So I think that was important. I also like that. Yeah, that's a good point.
And we discussed the finale. We kind of like the finale in a way. I just don't like what Laurie's character does. I wish they had a reversal for her character. I think that was sitting there
on
the cutting room
more sense,
floor.
Really
I just, I saw that in the scaffolding. And I think they changed it. I think they decided. They got cold feet with
you
it.
You may be right. That could be something that comes out in Hollywood lore some years later. And we have already seen in this franchise how things that are best laid plans, they get messed up with studio interference and involvement. And sometimes an executive needs to put his foot down and have his own way. So who knows? And maybe that'll be lost to lore. We reached the end.
We have reached the end of the rewatch part.
This is the end of the rewatch. This is your last MMO Does Halloween episode. I think this is part 7, I want to say. We did this over 7 episodes. We did way too many. But again, it was just gratuitous on my end. And I appreciate my co-partner here coming along for the ride and helping me out, letting me do this.
A serious exercise in film appreciation and criticism, though. And podcasting.
It
was a serious project that we undertook. And I think it had a lot of rewards. So if this was your first one with us, we had Halloween 3 that was awesomely bad. Halloween 2 that has up and down, right?
It's on the line. Yeah, it toes the line.
We had Halloween 1, of course, we gushed. We have H2O,
loved
we gushed. We had 4-5, which was half okay, and then half, you know, we hated. And
you're
then
walking downwards, and then you fall off the cliff.
6 and Resurrection, we hated, but we loved to hate it. It was a funny episode.
If you get the theatrical cut of 6, it's terrible.
I re-listened to that episode lately, like the other day, and I laughed a lot at us. I think we're funny. I think we're hilarious.
So we are the funniest people on earth.
So that was the series. Like we really bit into it.
Yeah, this was big. We really wanted to do this too to commemorate, you know, David Gordon Green, the 40th anniversary, all that stuff. It just kind of lined up. We actually missed out on doing the Halloween stuff last year when we first just got started. We just passed our 1 year anniversary of actually doing this weekly. So this is a big deal for us, and we were glad you guys were along for the ride. We're not done yet. We have one more stop to make in Haddonfield, and that's going to be tomorrow. You'll probably hear it early Friday morning. It'll be live, I think, the 2018 David Gordon Green Halloween movie, and that's where we're going to end up. I don't know how we're going to handle it. We're going to see what happens, but everything we're hearing, Mark Andreyko just predicted on Twitter earlier today that he thinks this Halloween's going to open 90 to 100 million. So everything we're hearing, this is going to be a big deal, and I think that their truck is going to be backed up by Universal to give David Gordon Green and Danny McBride everything they want to make a sequel. It yeah. sounds that way.
Yeah, I think this is going to do well. I wonder how they're going to write the story to get us to a sequel, though. I mean, I hope, you know, the best Halloweens, at least the ones that the sequel that we enjoyed most had the most closed ending.
Very finite.
Very conclusive.
Right. But so no, sir. We can retcon anything, even a man's head falling off!
Literally.
So, yeah, stick with us. We will be with you one more time. If you need the Oscar stuff, we have our recent Oscar sprint profiles of Best Picture Candidate A Star Is Born, Best Picture Candidate First Man. We just reviewed our Oscar trailers for the fifth time, different movies all throughout our fifth Oscar trailer review. We're doing it all, as well as this horror stuff. We're probably not done with horror. I think we're going to have one more surprise in store for you guys before the month's over. But if not, hey, it was a hell of a run, and thank you for sticking with us and listening to these episodes.
So the best ending for our Halloween series would be one Mike murdering the other, and then
oh, it's in the cards. Don't worry.
Heavy breathing, right? But if we can't get that, I would say Rob Zombie. There's a good filmmaker in there. He's just got he can't commit unforgivable sins upon his audience.
And also, I'm going to kill you.
And also, the flash in my eyes tells you you were right all along.
Reach out to us. Let us know what you think about the zombie movies or any of the Halloweens or any of the Oscar sprint profiles. We've done Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Facebook, Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram, MM, and Oscar on Twitter, Mike, Mike, and Oscar at gmail.com, .com, and on the Reddit machine. Guys, reality sucks. Keep watching movies and killing those babysitters with us, Michael.
Rob Zombie. More human than humane. Rob Zombie.
Oh, look at you. You had that written down ahead of time.
I did not write it down in words of wisdom. I was going to say it earlier in the profile, but we already referenced the song.
I see. All right.
So I was like, that's a redundancy. So, but now, after like 45 minutes of ranting and raving.
45? Yes, again, Bucko. Guys, we'll see you next time.
See ya.